You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Saturday, April 8th. It's Steve Perry. I'm Ian Clark, and we're back from BMO Field. Disappointed, let down, wanting just that bit more, as TFC cannot take advantage of an extra man and settled for a back-and-forth 2-2 draw with Atlanta United. Despite that, we were pleased to see the first home goals of the season, first goal from Jovinko, which underscored an outstanding first half. Yet that wasn't enough. We discussed Atlanta's two goals that isolated Chris Mavinga, but good performances by Victor Vasquez and Armando Cooper, then finished with sights and sounds and a Canadian Premier League smoke and mirrors. It's all that and more on the next 40 minutes on Eastside Stand Up. Technically not summer yet, and I guess we should be glad that we are able to do a rooftop studio podcast, because after last week, you guys had to take what you could get. We're trying to do this podcast by
moonlight
and see how it goes. Steve, I'm glad that when we on the walk home, I don't know if you noticed, but I purposely did not talk about the match. I really was adamant on, you know, having different topics to go over, because I found I was pretty disappointed.
Well, you weren't disappointed for the whole game. In fact, I remember at one point you said, "Oh, this is pretty exciting." You did say that to me.
At the end of the first half.
Yeah,
and it was.
I don't think it was terrible in the second half either.
No,
there
were
chances.
But I mean,
I certainly wrote a book in the first half and
and
maybe a page in the second.
Yeah. But I think my main disappointment is coming from the way maybe we came out in the second half, and then how a man up. I just felt like that last 10 minutes, we just couldn't unlock a team. We weren't necessarily playing all men, 9 men behind the ball. They just couldn't create any really great chances down that final stretch when, for most of the game, we had lots of great chances. So maybe that's where my disappointment is, that last little stretch. We just really couldn't generate anything to really make us get on our feet.
Sure, and I guess we have more hope because of the last 15 minutes being a man up. I think you kind of think, okay, this is it. This is where it's going to happen. You know, it's not uncommon for that to happen, where a team goes up a player, or down a player, I mean, and the other team underperforms because they just psychologically, they sort of feel like, okay, now they got it in the bag, and then they sort of maybe don't go in it as much. I mean, there was certainly no shortages of trying to change up the play in that last little bit, but I feel like on Atlanta's behalf, it was probably, you know, to kill the clock, and on our behalf, it was trying to, like, build an offensive formation. But maybe we should start at the beginning with formation, because that's what we like to start with.
Sure.
Formation, right? So I think there's a new player from in the back.
Well, new this season.
He hasn't had
tons of playing time. He's sort of come in a little bit here and there, and that's Mavinga, who comes from, people know he's came in from France. I guess that's another one of Vanny's connections to the league he played in for a little while there. That was the main change. And also, he's left-footed. So I think that's why we might be looking to do more on in the center. Zavaleta, who's right-footed on the right, Mavinga, who's left-footed on the left, of your three center backs in that, you know, whatever you want to call it, a 5-3-2 or a 3-5-2 formation that we've been running. So we had that, and Bono started the net, as everyone may have heard, as Irwin
is injured from
really
last week.
Looked like, I mean, I saw that play and I can feel for him.
They showed it this at the beginning of this week's game.
Yeah,
too.
And it's like, myself, I'm dealing with a football injury with my left knee, just like Colin Irwin, although I play in the lowest tier of rec soccer. Not a very good team. Anyways, so he's out, looks like, 4 to 5 weeks. And then we had in the midfield, they've sort of been juggling it a little bit this year. You know, Osorio started some games. Vasquez started some games. Cooper started some games. It was Cooper who got the start. Vasquez gets the start.
It's the same as last week, actually.
Was it?
Except for the new kid.
Right, okay, except for Mavinga.
Kuminga.
And then, of course, as always.
And Bona.
Yeah.
So, like, it was basically how they ended up with Mavinga in the lineup. And so, right off the top, I guess the observation is that the player that did all the damage for Atlanta was the player that Mavinga was covering.
Yes.
And I didn't actually watch it too closely because I felt like, what was it, Villalabo?
Hector Villalabo.
He, I feel like maybe it wasn't those weren't 1v1 situations. He was getting the ball from other places. And Mavinga wasn't compensating by getting pulled out, which is, you don't want that either, right? So I just don't remember how they unfolded the goals, other than I just felt like they were good, strong goals.
Well, I remember.
And I don't think it was his fault necessarily. I felt like the first goal was kind of, or maybe the second, was all of our defense were caught off their line. Like, they, none of them were back.
Yeah. Well, I think both instances, they got him, like, I think the first one was a long through ball.
Yeah.
That just was perfectly placed and
it was beautiful. It made me want to switch sides.
Yeah, and Villalba got behind Mavinga. Yeah. And it was, and the second one, I think it was over the top instead of along the ground. But it was like, there you go again, twice in a row. And then,
but I felt like it came from the other side. I felt like it was like on Zavaleta's side, the second goal.
Anyways, and that, but of course, shortly thereafter, we saw Mavinga come out for Haglund. So the question was,
not shortly. He came out sort of late in the game. Like, I think he was the first substitution.
Haglund was the first substitution,
but it was 2/3 into the game. Like, he was at the 60th minute mark. I think it was like it was late into the game. So, I mean, they were giving him his time, I think. Even, I mean, they didn't change him. They only changed him when he got injured, I think, when he felt like he got taken out, right?
Yeah.
That was a yellow, too, that the player got.
Yes.
So, I don't think the trainer came out, but I think that they realized, okay, we got to sub him now. We'll use this as injury as the excuse to take him out.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
But if we circle, you know, I wanted to kind of start from the beginning, because I wanted to make note of that first half. I mean, we did talk about the first second, how that I thought the first half was. If I'm thinking back through the season, I'm trying to, like, you know, like, things go by so fast and I lose track, but that might have been one of the most chances we've had in a half.
It was certainly exciting.
The thing that was most disappointing for me in that was that right off the start, I thought we looked really good. Like, I thought Jozy Altidore had his head in the game. You know, Vasquez looked good right off the hop. Cooper looked great, I thought, in the first half. Like, that front half of our team was, right from the opening whistle, like, completely in sync. And that's what was disappointing, was that Atlanta got on the board.
I think Cooper
first.
Was the consistent with last week. I think Cooper had a pretty great good game last week, despite everybody else having a shit game, or, like, just being sort of nullified by the weather. But, and the rest of them just couldn't, the elements got the best of them, right? So I think it was just people not being able to play in the elements. And to be fair, it had rained 24 hours straight, and it was a wall of rain coming down. It was like, those were difficult conditions to play in. Although it did remind me a lot of the final from last year, so I really felt like it was deja vu from like a few months earlier when we lost in the final. And it felt creepy returning back to the scene of the crime. So I don't know if I've said that. There was just a haunting feeling to last week's game, but Cooper was the outstanding player. He wins man of the match today.
Yep.
He does have a good first half. He takes out a player at the end of the game. I think it was a 50-50 ball that you know, he just wasn't kind of,
oh, yeah,
he wasn't,
yeah,
let himself,
right,
get undone by. Some people think he just dropped his shoulder and took him out. I don't think it was that badly intentional, but I do think that, like, you know, the Atlanta's got a good scrappy team, and, you know, you want to go in hard. So I think he was just realizing it. He had judged it well, and anyway, I almost feel like it was that. It was that taking out the player that maybe won him the man of the match in some way. Although I know that's not it, but, like, it kind of feels like it just because
it's
of where,
like,
it happened in the game. Right?
Yeah, that's all. And that's a Toronto kind of man of the match. Like,
yeah, for
Toronto
sure.
likes the scrappy,
like,
gritty guys. Yeah, they don't the finesse. I mean, obviously we will love some of them on this team, but I think Toronto as a whole likes that gritty, scrappy little guy.
Yeah,
who's willing to get stuck in and get his nose dirty and get in a fight.
Yeah, or like go into a hard challenge or something, right? Like, yeah. And come out with the ball or something like that, right? Anyway, yeah. So I often wonder if it's got something to do with our hockey culture, right?
I think it does.
So
that's the kind of hockey player Toronto likes.
And, you know, this is on the night where, like, Toronto, the Maple Leafs are actually vying for a playoff spot. So there's a lot of people holding their breath hoping that that team's going to actually go through to the playoffs.
Yeah.
But aside from that, like, that's just a sort of backstory that doesn't really even fit into this story.
But you
were talking about the finesse, and the thing is that our first goal was a beautiful finesse goal.
It was great.
Which was, it came off, I think Vasquez fed Altidore. Altidore does like a side heel to an on-running Giovinco, which is, no one could even anticipate that play. That's a highlight. That was a highlight reel.
Hey, first home goal of the year.
Yeah. And
pretty great.
It was fucking beautiful. And I think you're going to see that in the highlight reels this week for sure, because that goal was just too picture perfect. But then we started seeing more side heels. We saw Giovinco give Altidore a side heel later on in the second half. And I'm thinking, is this the new offensive strategy for Toronto FC? The side heel. Is the side heel making a return? So anyway, it just started to get a bunch of play in our play. And I thought, oh, this is something new.
Yeah.
That's
there was definitely
coming on and having an effect, really.
And Bradley doing that sort of spin.
That was another thing.
Spin
He did
shield.
It last week. He did it near the end of the last season. And I feel like he's taken the season to perfect it. And he's done it every game since. I don't know. It certainly showed up in the highlight reels at the half. So,
yeah,
it's like a shielding turn, right?
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It looks beautiful. And
the first half had a lot.
I don't know
how
they don't get dizzy.
No. But, you know, it's like that first half had a lot of, I would say, it seemed like as the first half progressed, you know, everyone was getting really comfortable and willing and wanting to try things.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw Cooper, when he'd get the ball, especially 1v1, he'd do a stall, and then he'd stop, and then he'd go, and then he'd just leave that guy in the dust.
Yeah.
And that was something that, you know, we've watched Cooper, obviously, since he came onto the team, and I've sort of been mixed, and I don't know if I want to say this was one of the best halves I've seen him play, because I know he's had some great ones. But that was something that I really noticed, was that impressed me, was that when he would get in those positions 1v1 and do that turn, I don't know if he's like an out-and-out sprinter, but that first one and two steps is really quick. Like, it's just like he can leave that guy from a standstill and get away from him so quickly.
His footwork reminds me of a boxer with how quick he can dance with him. And I also noticed that Altidore, especially in the second half when he was getting tired, was giving it for Cooper to do all the hard work, doing all the sort of the outpacing and sort of deking and movement of the ball so that he could get into position or just rest, really. And he becomes an outlet for Altidore so that he can get, like, you know, some Josie time so that he can get, you know, back into the game. I feel also that, like, you were talking about other players. I think Betashore was an example where, you know, he's looked awkward at the best of times. Even today he had that, but he had three or four flat runs on the flank, which mostly went nowhere, but they became crosses. And with each consecutive cross, you could see it getting closer and closer to getting to the man, which led to the second goal, right?
Yeah.
Which also was a precision strike with Justin Morrow running into it. Like, no one could cover him because it was like a long run, and Betashore it was the timing of the two was beautiful, and I felt like it was also no slouch of a goal. It was like a fucking high. That was also a high.
It was a great goal.
We scored two beautiful goals, and if the game was about beauty, we would win. And we went into the half, I think, 2-1, right?
Only
to be undone after the first 2 minutes.
Within a minute or two
of
the second half.
By the same Villalba.
Hector, I think it's Villalba.
Villalba? I thought he was a good player.
Feel free to correct us on that.
I feel like he was a good player. He's
got a good pedigree.
He does certainly do a dodgy kind of drop in the first half that gets the fans against him. But, you know, people would be against him anyway.
And a long goal celebration.
Yeah, both times.
Both times. Like, I don't understand this, how it's like I pick up the ball.
Oh.
I go to the corner.
It's completely a mind fuck, right?
Yeah.
It's completely a mind fuck. I mean, he's just fucking with us.
Well, it worked.
No.
And the whole team goes and hugs him and, like, just everyone just patting his back for, like,
a
minute.
Yeah, and
Toronto
FC is lined up, ready to take the kickoff, watching the whole thing, right? So he's got also, like, a captive audience, right? He's just rubbing it in. It's whatever. That works, right? In some ways, I feel like it's a Latin American thing. It's a head game.
Well, we obviously, I mean, this is Atlanta United, who has an Argentinian, the former Argentinian head coach. I think two or three Argentine, like youth, like young Argentines, a Paraguayan, if I'm not mistaken. What's the other nationality I'm thinking of? A lot of, oh, Venezuelan.
So he also, striker. I think he also coached Paraguay, didn't he?
Yep.
So
the whole connect, like, yeah, very integrated.
He's certainly mining. He's certainly mining his connections.
Yeah,
which is something that we've always said. You know, Tim always used to talk about like trying to go down to South America and scout down there, right? So I'm glad. And it's kind of neat to see it working for somebody. Unfortunately, it's not us.
Five games in.
Yeah. Well, you said that they've Atlanta coming into this has scored a number of goals.
Like, yeah, I think they're at 11. Coming into this game, and now they're at 13, which is pretty impressive. On I think it's the fifth game for them, if I'm not mistaken.
So they're yeah,
they had a couple. They one of those games was against Minnesota, who are just god awful. You know, there's people are saying that's
this they're a new team.
Yeah, and they're saying they could be worse than Toronto FC was.
For a decade.
Yeah, well, in their inaugural season, anyways. I don't think they'll. Toronto's kind of set the bar. as one of the worst expansion teams. Yeah, we're good for something. But I think, you know, again, that first half, I was just really happy to see that. As my first game. So obviously, as the listener would have known, I wasn't here last week. I was away. This was my return to the scene of the crime. You know, a little bit bittersweet, I got to say. I was feeling it, like being like, this is my first time back at the stadium since December.
I think my bittersweetness now for this game, aside from the last, I'm over last week's game. This game was that I felt like that was our game to lose, and we did. Or we didn't lose, but we tied. So we dropped points. I mean, we certainly dropped 2 points, and that will come back. I mean, that always comes back to haunt you in the end, right? So regardless of the different theories that we've heard about, like how it only matters how you do in the second half of the season, I feel like that was our game, and we just dropped the points. And you know, you can't lose these games at home. I mean, we've said it before, and everyone knows it. It's not like this isn't rocket science. You know, like fuck, that's 2 points. That was 2 points that we lost, right?
Yeah.
So even though we wind up level and we get a point out of it, I feel like shit, we're slipping in the division.
And I think also part of me. Well, there's two things. Obviously, there's more teams in the league, so there is. These points might mean something more. Might mean more than they would have in previous years, but you know, I also just think of it from sometimes just the perspective of, you know, what you expect from this team and where you expect they should be. And I also kind of like I'm just like, you just take in the atmosphere around the club and in the stadium and what's going on. And it's like, these are just games that if we had won this game, which would have been uplifting, you know, and I think it would have built. Something moving, like going into Columbus next weekend, a win at home, your first win at home, I think would have helped propel you stronger into that game. Obviously, but I just like, I really want to iterate that, which is
like a derby match for us, right?
Yeah.
So, and I feel like at this point, we're like, what is this, our third draw?
Yes.
And
if I'm mistaken.
We've won one and drawn three times or four times or something. Like
we have run defeated.
Yeah, so you know the MLSC tries to get mileage out of that undefeated thing claim, but it's, you know, it's not really, that's not something to be proud of, because I mean I don't know, there's more to that story than undefeated. We're not like undefeated sounds great, but it's not. I mean, there's quite a few games. There's quite a few draws in there. Like it's almost all draws. Like there's only one different game with a different result.
Yeah,
which is leaving us really. In the mediocre middle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And for a team that is expected to... This is the dawn of the Reds, right? This is the team that's supposed to win. Like,
well, yeah, we are MLS Cup finalists.
We're trying to defend this to win it, right? So it feels like it's a slow start.
I think that's... Especially, again, we didn't have 8 or 9 games on the road to start the season.
I mean, are we just suffering from... Like losing the final? Like, is it like, are we just depressed?
Well,
like,
I mean, we're not starting 0-5. I mean, that would be a shocker. I'm willing to give it at this point a little bit of leeway. I mean, if it's 5 games in, we've seen teams start atrocious. So, like New York last year.
Last week's game was 5 minutes away from losing. And if it wasn't for Cooper heading the ball off the line in that last 5 minutes, that would have been a different result.
Sure.
And each one of those ties So, like, every game except for the one wind could have been a different result.
Yeah.
Which is, like, doesn't I'm not confident about this, right? I'm not feeling confident.
Yeah, this is the only thing I'll throw out there to you and whoever's listening. Is just two examples, especially from last year, are New York, who started the season atrocious, and Seattle. I mean, Seattle's almost until August, maybe until July, were awful. Awful, awful, awful. And then they fire their coach, the assistant comes in, and their season did a 180. And they signed a couple guys. I should say that, too. They signed some really key players. But, I mean, the first half of their season, and when we saw them play here, they were shit, even though we didn't beat them. We tied. But they were atrocious. So I know you already prefaced this, being like, I know people say it's how you finish, but it's, you know, you don't want it. I think as long as you don't fall so far behind at this point of the year. You know, we've had seasons, obviously, where we started 0-9. Well, that was done. We were done then.
Using the tortoise and the hare metaphor? That's what I'm asking. Because it feels like it.
I know it sounds like it. It's not. I'm really just trying. I think I'm not even using any metaphor. I'm just saying, look, league precedence is that we've seen, you know, we've seen the Galaxy start this season awfully. We've seen the Red Bulls do it, I think, more than once and finish first place.
Yeah.
I think we'll be okay. And I think we're seeing some guys, like Cooper's looking good. I think Vasquez is starting to get his feet. I thought this was one of his best games I've seen him play. I think as those guys kind of all, and even Josie and Jovinko on that goal, I mean, that was, how in sync was that?
Yeah.
I think you just got to hang tight. The only thing, I mean, I still think I wouldn't mind. I don't know if Mavinga's the guy. And if a back three of Moore, Zavalad, and Hagelin are going to be reliable for another 34 games this season.
Yeah, well, you know, they got to build chemistry, right? They don't know each other yet. So that's what I feel like.
Mavinga.
Yeah. And
we do have talking points in the second half, though, Steve. We can't forget that.
And then we were talking about, and although I've been talking about like the doomsday scenario, I also want to say that like there was an awful lot of chances in our favor. Like, I mean, aside from the two beautiful goals that Atlanta got, I mean, there was maybe a third chance on net, but not many more. However, it was the opposite for us. It was just like a volley after volley of great chances, missed opportunities, near misses, all kinds of things that, like, every one of them had second and third chances at goal. So I feel like it was exciting. I mean, we kind of forget the first half because the second half was kind of long and boring a little bit. I mean, and maybe there was more anticipation for the second half, especially at the last 15 minutes when we were man up, feeling like, oh, we can get somewhere. But then, like, there was all the dragging out tactics and all the bullshit that just never went anywhere, right? So the stalling tactics killed the momentum, and the momentum didn't really ever get going again. So, you know, anyway.
What did you think of that referee?
I didn't think he was awful.
How do you feel about the red? That was a bit of a scene.
Okay, so how do you feel about the referee? Because I don't know what that question was about.
Well, Gantar is I think a long running villain for TFC. I think I've seen a lot of games.
Did you think he had a terrible game today?
I think there's a little bit of inconsistency, which is not unusual. I mean, remember you might talk about.
I've been thinking about this an awful lot about soccer's inability to bring in the camera.
Oh, okay.
And I've been thinking that every other sport has done it. And soccer hasn't. And more games are talked about with regards to the crappy call that the ref made than about the beautiful plays in the game. And I feel like if they ever brought in this fucking camera, it would finally... Like, I know everyone talks about how it would kill momentum, but I think it would settle some shit. I think, you know, you'd have, like, somebody, a fourth linesman who could actually make the call and make it in a way that it was just, that you could defend it.
And just be like, yeah, you did elbow him in the head.
Yeah. So... As for the call, the late call that happened, I also feel like maybe that was a camera call, because I feel like the ref hadn't made the call. It took a long time for that red to come out. Like, it took like 2.5 minutes. They had shown the replay up on the board. Everyone started booing when that happened, and then our team started getting irate because they were watching it. And I don't know if you saw Josie's reaction, but he was over there yelling at players, right? And yelling at the ref in particular, which is when their card comes out. And I feel like you never really want to see the ref being swayed by players. You never want to see that lobbying happening.
Except when it's you're the home team.
Yeah, but you don't want to see it because you feel like you should have just made the call.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like maybe because it was so late, then I feel like the other team feels hard done. And I feel like you feel like you got one over on them, and maybe you don't play so like into it anymore because you feel like, oh, you won it because you got the call.
Yeah.
Like, whereas, no, you got to go out and win the game, right? So, I don't know. I feel like I think that there's an easy solution to this that's not being entertained by the World Football Organization, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And for whatever reasons, I just feel like it's a stupid thing not to do, not to consider.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that might have been the most bit of action after that we saw from that point on was Haglund Zavaleta waving goodbye. Cooper, I can only assume he spoke to some of those guys in their native language.
That was Yamil Assad,
set them
right?
off. What's that?
Yamil Assad got the red.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, probably.
Cooper,
You were thinking Cooper was the provocateur.
I think he spoke a little Spanish and told him what they really think, that the ref never would have known what he would have said.
Yeah, sure.
That's the vibe that I got from that situation, because they looked pretty ticked off at whatever he said.
Yeah.
So if we...
Was there anything else that happened in the second half? They score. They level us in the first 2 minutes. There's a lot of gameplay back and forth, but nothing super exciting. I mean, I didn't.
No, I just we had all, then substitutions. Osorio comes on, Ricketts comes on, and neither of those were really.
It was mostly substitutions in the last third of the game, right?
Yeah.
Which I don't know. No one really made a difference, right? Ricketts, Osorio never really did anything.
No, we couldn't unlock them with even up a man. That was, I guess, again, how you leave with disappointment that we had all our great chances happened when it was even. And when we had the greatest chance really to win the game, there just was nothing that was like really. No, I didn't leave that last 15 minutes being like, shit, if just, you know, we, oh, 1 inch closer and we would have had the win. It was like, no, there really nothing really stood out for me.
Yeah, so I don't
know. That was disappointing. I think that's where the disappointment comes from.
Sometimes that means that you're out of shape. They don't look like they're out of shape. Sometimes it means they might have been cold, right? Because it's a cold night. So I'm feeling like after running for 90 minutes, you kind of like after like the first hour, your muscles start cramping and stuff, and you're not firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like whatever. I want to say that when Jovinko scored the goal though, and I don't know if you noticed, but he did a chest bump with Jozy Altidore, like the tallest player. He's the shortest player, and I just thought that was hilarious. I just want to say, if I had a sight and sound. That was, for me, that was like an organic thing that was like, I thought that was awesome. I just thought it was awesome.
Yeah. I don't know if I, what about any sights and sounds? You can roll off a few of those.
I didn't mean to go into that. I just wanted to say.
Well, it's okay, because I mean, what else are we going to talk about with this game?
Because it was a beautiful goal and then it was a feel-good celebration, which wasn't like bullshit-ish, like going into the corner, right?
Yeah.
And doing that head fuck. But they want to do that in like outside of their stadium, right? I understand why they did it. I'm not bitter at it. I in fact, like with people watching them react, I'm just like, you're feeding it. Just ignore it. Like really, yeah. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Let them celebrate. Don't worry, the game will be back in a minute.
Yeah,
or two.
Yeah, we ended up we scored two goals, but then the second one, of course, not. But
yeah. I don't know what the other. I mean, that's the only other sight and sound, which was sort of brought in by the other team.
The only thing that I noticed was when we arrived to the game, the national anthem hasn't started, and I was like, "Why is our whole section standing up?" I thought that was weird.
What was going on?
I don't know. And I thought I was like, "Is this what's happened?" Like we left here after the MLS Cup, and now 105 is a standing section. I was actually really hoping that. I was like, "Wow, this is great!" Like this really. And then everyone sat down, and I was like, "Oh, that was short lived."
Yeah. No, that's not happening. Yeah, no.
I don't have too many other like really exciting observations. Although there is, I guess if we wanted to, we could segue now into some smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was a bit this week. There's two things that I wanted to
address.
And one, I'm sure we obviously would have been more timely if not last week, but I wasn't here because there was an article that came out that I'm sure most people have read by now. That was John Molinaro's An Oral History of Toronto FC.
I haven't read this.
I suggest people. It's a great read. Like it is a really great article. I say my only problem was with some of the people who are giving their oral history of it. I don't particularly care for, and it is kind of hard to listen to like some people who were involved with the club talk about those early years and kind of like laugh it off. And it's like, I wasn't fucking laughing when I was paying a ticket price increase every single year, and the team was getting worse and shittier and more dysfunctional, and you look back on that and kind of think it's funny, or you look back and think that you guys are doing something great when you clearly were just a bunch of fuck-ups who were had no qualification to be running a football team. That's my takeaway from that. There was some great stories in it, but I definitely was like, there was points I was like really like grinding my teeth about the way some of the guys that were involved with on MLSE and the Toronto FC front office, the way they kind of like recollect or they look back on that, those first, I guess, seven or eight years, because I'm just like, you guys, that was tough. And then the second thing that I wanted to bring note to that I think really made the rounds this week, that it was great, was that, I guess you could say, friends of the podcast, Vocal Minority. And I kind of like, I think I like just before like that, so they put out this thing of like, oh, it's Bill Manning Day. We're doing a podcast with Bill Manning. And I got to be honest, my first reaction was like, oh, fuck. Because my like take.
It's going to be club speak, really.
And it's like, I shouldn't have been because I know them, but I still was because like I personally, like in my capacity doing this podcast and following Toronto and kind of doing the website, is I don't want to know anyone in the front office. I don't want to know any of the players because I want to be able to criticize them openly. And I don't want to have to like change my, I don't want to become biased because now it's like, I've met you and now we're kind of buds, or you did me a favor and I can't now say shit that I normally would.
Yeah.
And I was concerned about that, but I will say,
but they were, yeah. So for being too close,
it was fair. Well, I thought, and then I didn't want to listen to it because of that, because I knew Bill, I've heard Bill Manning talk.
But I do think that they pressed them.
Yes.
On quite a few things, and they didn't let him off the hook when he didn't answer the question, which was great because they came back to the answers. And I feel like, I don't think it was so much of a spin piece, especially when they were talking about a second Toronto team. And I guess they were talking about a TFC 2, is it, or something? Maybe you can fill in here what they were trying to talk about. So is this the thing that you want to talk about?
Yeah, this is a little sidebar.
So I want to follow up with that if I could, but let's.
So the way I'll just. Because that was the thing that was when they posted that, I was glad they said this is part two and this is what he talks about. And a couple weeks ago, I think it was early in the season, we talked about it quickly. There was two articles that came out weeks ago where one in the Sun and one again with John Molinaro, where he interviewed Bill Manning and Tim Bezbachenko about a potential Canadian Premier League team launching in Toronto, and how obviously everyone at Toronto FC says, well, if it's going to be in Toronto, it should be us that runs that team. And a lot of people who are involved in Canadian soccer think Toronto FC should have nothing to do with a Canadian team because A, they're in MLS, and MLS looks out for America and they look out for MLS teams. They aren't looking out for Canadians. And, you know, Bill Manning had some... I've never read an article where literally every single statement the GM or the president said, I completely disagree with. Like, everything they said in terms of, like, you know, we should be the ones on the team because of this. And I was like, that's bullshit. So Bill Manning goes on Vocal Minority. You should listen to it for yourself. But, I mean, my main takeaway and the way that I would say it is, obviously, Bill Manning is an MLS guy. And he's an American. It is hard for me, you know.
Right down to the joking about New York accents.
Yeah. To hear him kind of say, you know, what should happen in Toronto. When obviously, I mean, he's just going to look out. He's going to protect his league and he's going to protect his current team. So it was hard for me to, like, listen to that and actually take him seriously. Because I knew it was all bullshit and it was all... I don't know if I call it spin, but I just never thought he would have been... He actually would have been insightful or progressive or anything like that.
I did find it insightful for a couple of reasons. Okay, and I felt like for the greediness of the team, for the self-interest, like I think, you know, and I don't necessarily think that this is the way that teams operate anyway, right? But like the idea of like player acquisitions, player development, this is how you make money by developing players and selling them, right? That's kind of his thing, right? You make a funnel, you funnel the players in, you develop them, you sell them. It's like, I read an article in The Guardian a few years back about this, and this player trade, this player development stuff that goes on is really the last form of human trafficking that exists in the world that's legal, right? That has no criminality against it. And this is how soccer teams make their money. And that's part of the justification for why he wants to run the second team, which to me is like, you got deep pockets. Part of it was like, we got deep pockets so we can do it. We're the only ones who could do it. So that's just the spin.
Yeah.
And then he said afterwards, if it's not going to be us, we're still going to be involved in it, player acquisition, and we're going to try and fuck with whatever team that does come in, because then that's competition, right?
Yeah.
So I just felt like, I don't know. I thought it was brutally honest in some ways, yeah. And I just felt like it's dirty, man. I mean, whatever.
Well,
everyone else made great arguments on that podcast for why there should be a good team, a second team, and it shouldn't be related to them. They were trying to be pleasant, so they didn't actually get down. They didn't get into the unpleasantries of like just calling him on his bullshit. So yeah. That's what you have to do when you're entertaining a guest, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because that's what you have to do. You have to kind of be nice.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's two things like
I felt that they did a great job, and yeah. I felt like you can read between the lines. There's enough there that you can say, yeah, it's pretty ugly.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like my comments or thoughts, you know, just to throw this out there, because for the listener who hears it and hears what Bill Manning has to say, I mean, there's a couple things where it's like, you know, we need to put TFC2 in this league, and you know, if we're trying to build a Canadian league and trying to make it legitimate, Toronto FC2 has been one of the worst teams in the USL, like very bad. So I don't know what that says about putting in one of the worst teams in the USL and presenting that as a key team in the Canadian Premier League.
Yeah.
Like that to me, whether it's a reserve team or whatever, that in itself is like, you have failed at putting out a competitive team at the level below MLS. So why should we trust you with handling what we're trying to make like a top Canadian league? And then the other one, you know, they obviously talk about how great they are in terms of, you know, developing players and how key TFC2 is that. But I mean,
where's the proof?
There isn't any.
Right.
And the irony is, you know, they talk about the player pool in Toronto and whatnot.
I feel like all the Toronto players that they bring back, or most of the Canadian talent that they bring back, doesn't come through their academy system.
No, or they sign them when they're 18 or 19.
Or they sign them and bring them back over from foreign, right?
Yeah.
Like,
or NC,
Ricketts,
like,
right?
Yeah. Yep. Or like Chapman, he was in the academy and they cut him loose and he went to the university and they brought him back. Or Raheem Edwards now is on the team.
They're not doing the job of the development.
No. I don't think Toronto's ever taken a kid who's been 14. I know they have a couple now in the system that are close, but who would be the first. But I don't think they've yet to take a kid who's 14 up to 19
like
and transition.
Like a Lionel Messi.
Well, we don't need but anything.
I'm not saying that, but I meant. But, yeah, but, you know but I mean. Barcelona brought him when he was like young, like 12 or something, and then they brought him up through their system, and then he played. He becomes their like hero,
yeah.
Right? Through their system.
Yeah.
Like he's a success story of how player development can work, right? So I'm just using him as a model for that.
Yeah.
We don't even have an example.
And I would throw out there, you were saying that, you know, they're the only ones with deep pockets. They're not the only ones with deep pockets. There are sporting billionaires in the GTA area, and one of them who has. One of the biggest clubs in Israel. So that's something to keep an eye out for if anything happens around here. And then the other one is that, you know, there are other academies in the GTA, one in particular that we've mentioned a million times on this, who developed the best goal-scoring rookie of all time in MLS, Sigma in Mississauga and Kyle Laren. And they probably have more players that have come out of their academy playing professional, I think, than Toronto FC does.
Mm.
In terms of like USL, NASL, yeah. And MLS. So yeah. There is enough to go around, I think, in the GTA that a team could run and not be associated with them.
Yeah. So but he was trying to paint a doomsday scenario, right? If it's not us, it won't work. That's what he was trying to say, right? He was trying to, that's also a strategy with sport.
And he also talks about, you know, how are you going to draw? And I think... another disappointing or another thing about that is that, and they kind of, I think they mentioned it too, but it's like when Toronto FC started, you know, it really wasn't that they put out a great product or they were doing anything superb in terms of running the club.
Oh, they
it
had
was
a monopoly.
But also, I think
when
that team launched, they expected it to be 12,000, I think they said 13,000 a game. And then David Beckham got announced and then they sold all their tickets. And then it was full. And I think it was, people here wanted it. The timing was right. It wasn't that they did anything fantastic.
No, it was the star power of the league. here's the challenge, right? All we are saying is put your money where your mouth is and let another team come in, and then you have to fucking start trying. Because no, you no longer have a monopoly, and you have to, like, you've been telling us how great you are, but there's nothing to compare against. So let's put another team here and see. Let's see how great you are. Because maybe that's what you're afraid of.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah. And to finish it off, in that article, and everyone kind of joked about this. He made an analogy or a metaphor about how, you know, a pizza shop can open up. You don't open a second one up down the road. And, in Halifax, I think Aaron Nielsen was saying there's a place in Halifax called Pizza Corner, where there's a pizza place on all four corners.
Oh, yeah.
And here in Toronto, up at Harbord and Spadina.
Yeah.
Papa Seo's and Cora are side by side, and they've
been
side by side for over 30 years. Years around.
They bring everybody because that's where you go to get pizza.
They coexist.
Yeah,
happily. And you know what? Some people only go to one. Some people go to both.
Yeah.
What's the big deal?
Yeah, totally.
I don't think either of them are insecure about each other. They're both selling pizza.
It doesn't hurt each other.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people in this city who like pizza. Right.
That's true.
So.
Great metaphor.
And if we can circle back to exit this podcast, Steve. Again, I think I just finished by saying disappointment, but I'm not necessarily pulling the fire alarm yet. I'm glad I saw two goals tonight. It was a nice night for a game. Can't argue with that.
And I will say that, like, when we get down to the home stretch and we miss out on a playoff position because we lost because of 2 points, we'll come back to regret this night.
Yeah. I'll replay this part in that episode. So coming up ahead next weekend, we got, I think it's Columbus.
In Columbus?
Yep, in Columbus on the 15th, if I'm not mistaken. And then I can't remember.
That's Easter Sunday?
Yeah, and then I can't remember if it's Houston that's coming up. But we got two Friday games in a row, 21st and 28th. So we'll leave that. Steve Perry, everyone knows his backstory. He's at Equalizing Distort Sunday nights. Still 10 p.m., right?
Yep.
89.1? 5. 89.5 on the dial. And is that you guys on Twitter?
No.
Okay. Sorry. All right, everyone knows you
wrong,
can catch me.
Wrong generation.
Yeah, yeah. You can catch me at Clark RNO.
I'm not Donald Trump.
I had a tweet from Simon asking about what we thought of Bono. And he also said they need to start winning these games. There, throw that at you, Steve. You enjoyed that. We'll keep an eye on him. Sorry, Simon, we didn't get to that.
But I do think that Bono... prevented a goal from happening. He claimed a spot in terms of the key. I think he came up with his one great save in the game. I think he had a good game, mostly.
Yeah, I do feel like the first goal kind of went through him.
Oh, that was he did look like a sieve.
Looked like he tried to catch it like a pointy football. I mean, he should have just made himself big.
Yeah. Yeah, and let it hit.
There's some analysis in the literally last seconds of the podcast to chew on. Sure. Okay, so we'll leave it at that, guys.
It's a bit random.
Yeah. Well, what are you going to do? Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next weekend.
We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter at Red Nation Online or by email at info or have your say at rednationonline.ca. Get in touch with us. Let us know how you thought the team did. Agree, disagree. It doesn't matter. Also, check out our other podcasts on Red Nation Online, From the Black Hole, Ours is the Fury, and our interview series. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.